Parshas Pekudei. Okay, Parshas Pekudei. So the Torah tells us about the setting up of the Mishkan, and the Perek Mem Pasuk Chaf. It's mentioned that before Moshe Rabbeinu was to put in the Aron in the Mishkan, he had to put the Luchos in the Aron. And he couldn't put the Aron in first and then the Luchos in the Aron. And the question is, why is it that way? Why is it that when it came to the Aron, the Luchos had to be placed in the Aron before the Aron was taken into the Mishkan? Now, and then there's a second question, and that is, and this question I think is raised by the Minchas Chinuch. During Bayisheni, they did not have the Luchos. The Luchos were hidden in underneath the Kodesh Kodashim. So with the Luchos, the Aron and the Luchos were not in the Mishkan, not in the Beis HaMikdash, not in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Minchas Chinuch raises the problem, okay, there was no Luchos there, but the Aron was a utensil of the Beis HaMikdash. And since it was a utensil of the Beis HaMikdash, there should have been a mitzvah of having the Aron in the Beis HaMikdash, even when there were no Luchos there. So why didn't they make a new Aron? Why didn't they make a new Aron during Bayisheni? Even though there was no Luchos, the tablets of the Aseret HaDibros of the Ten Commandments was not in the second Beis HaMikdash, but the Aron should have been there in any case. That's the question that the Minchas Chinuch raises. Now, my grandfather answered, and I think the Meshech Chachma also says the same thought, that the Aron was to be distinguished from all the other utensils of the Beis HaMikdash. The Shulchan, which had the Lechem HaPanim on it, which had the special breads on it. But if for some reason the breads couldn't be on the Shulchan, on the special table that was in the Beis HaMikdash in the temple, nevertheless, there was a mitzvah of having the Shulchan, of having the special table there. If the menorah couldn't be lit, and there were, according to some Rishonim, there were parts of the day when the menorah was not lit, still there was a mitzvah to have the menorah there. So the other utensils of the Beis HaMikdash of the temple, even when they weren't being used for their purpose, there was a mitzvah to have them in the Beis HaMikdash, because the menorah was a menorah even when it wasn't lit. The Shulchan was a Shulchan, even when there was no, the Lechem HaPanim was not on it. So when they brought in the Shulchan, the Lechem HaPanim was placed on the Shulchan, even after the Shulchan, after the table was placed in the Beis HaMikdash. The menorah was lit after the menorah was brought into the Beis HaMikdash. But the Aron, the Ark, when it was brought into the Beis HaMikdash, when it was brought in to the Mishkan, to the Tabernacle, it already had to have the Aseret HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, the tablets of the Ten Commandments in it. And the question is, why is it that way? And the answer is, when it came to the Aron, The Aron did not have its special status without the Ten Commandments in it, without the Aseres HaDibros in it. The Aron only had special status if it had the Aseres HaDibros in it. So because of that, to build an Aron in the Second Temple without the Luchos, without the tablets of the Aseres HaDibros, would have been meaningless. And because of that, since there was a mitzvah to bring the Aron in, the Aron only had its full status as an Aron, as an ark, when the Aseres HaDibros was in it. But the question is, why? Why should it be that the Aron was different than all the other utensils, or I should say, different than the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, different than the table, different than the menorah, different than the candelabrum? Why was it different? And I think there is a hashkafa behind it, a certain thought that's behind it. There is a greater danger in the externals of Torah when it's lacking Torah itself. There are many that want to identify with the Torah only with the externals of the Torah. In a sense, they want to hold the Torah that has a beautiful cover over it. But they would prefer in their actions, in their way of life, that the scrolls on which the mitzvot of the Torah are written wouldn't be there. And that represents a great danger when it comes to Torah. Many people invoke the Torah, but in doing so, they are constantly rejecting the halakha. They're rejecting the Jewish law. The Torah is only a symbol for them. Sometimes it represents a history for them. And they want their history somehow, like a picture of our ancestors that are hanging on the wall. It's very interesting. I know a person that used to work. There was a teacher in one of the humanistic synagogues. The humanistic synagogues claim that they are interested in the Jewish culture. And in their synagogue, they had an Aron Kodesh. I shouldn't use that word. They had an ark. And this teacher went when no one was looking and opened up the ark, and the ark was empty. It was important for them as a synagogue to have an ark, but having a Torah was not important. And perhaps they preferred not having a Torah, not just because of the expense, but because of what the Torah meant. And it's interesting, there around the Aron, around the Ark, in the Beis HaMikdash, and in the Mishkan, and when the Ark was carried outside, there was a Zer Zohav. There was a golden crown. And there were three. The Shulchan also had a Zer Zohav, also had a golden crown. And the Mizbach HaKtores, the altar for the incense service, also had a crown, a golden crown around it. And there's a very interesting medrash. And the medrash says that the word Zer, Zayin Reish, is written with the same letters that the word Zor is written, also Zayin Reish. What does Zor mean? Zor means something foreign. A non-Kohen who does the service is a Zor. He is not the person who has the responsibility nor the ability halachically to do the service. He is foreign. And the Medrash says about the word Zer, which means a crown, which was around the Aron, which was around the Ark, and also around the Shulchan, around the table upon which the Lechem upon him was lying or situated, and around the Mizbach HaKtores, the incense altar. So the Medrash says the word Zayin Reish is written as Zor, but it's pronounced Zer, a crown. What is the Medrash telling us? Now, very often, you have people who dress up, who use the clothes, rabbinical clothes, and they try to give the impression, because they wear rabbinical clothes, that they are rabbis. And everybody realizes that when it comes to a doctor, just because somebody puts on a white coat, he is no authority in Jewish law, in medicine. Everybody realizes that in any profession that has a special uniform, that just because somebody wears the uniform, it doesn't give him the ability to be able to function in the job that the uniform he's wearing is associated with. Just because somebody will put on the uniform of a policeman doesn't mean that he's a policeman. Why? In other words, there's a difference between uniform and costume. People dress up, approaching. Today is the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni, the month of Purim. For some reason, it's mentioned in Poskim also there seems to be a tradition to dress up in costumes. I assume that perhaps that the reason there's a custom to dress up in costumes on Purim is because Achashverosh told Haman Haman suggested to Achashverosh, thinking that Achashverosh had him in mind, that Haman wanted to be dressed up in the robes of King Achashverosh. And ultimately, it turned out that really Achashverosh did not have Haman in mind. He had Mordechai in mind. So perhaps dressing up in uniforms that are really not part of who we are doesn't make us that person. There's a saying, clothes make a person. I beg to differ. It might make a person, it might make the appearance of a person. But if it's only an appearance, it's a costume. It's not who the person really is. So I think that's perhaps what the Medrash says. The Medrash is trying to tell us that the crowns, and the crowns represent different ideas. The crown of the Aron represents the idea of the crown of Torah. The crown of Torah has to be a Zer Zahav. It has to be a crown. It can't be foreign. It's interesting, in Parsha Shoftim, the Torah tells us, one hand, the Torah tells us about the laws of appointing judges. Shoftim b'shotim tinlutein l'cha b'chol g'lulecha. On the other hand, the Torah immediately afterwards says, Lo sita l'cha ashera. Do not plant an asherah tree. An asherah tree was a tree that was associated with idolatry, with avodah zarah. And Rashi cites the Medrash. What is the connection? It's Gemara also. What is the connection between the asherah, the prohibition of making an asherah tree near the Mizbeach, near the altar, with shoftim, with judges? And the Chazal tell us, our sages tell us, that just that if somebody appoints a judge who is not worthy of being a judge, so it's like he plants an asherah tree. It's like he plants an idolatrous tree. And if he does it in a place where there is somebody who is on the level of Torah knowledge that was deserving of that position, it's like he's planting the idolatry tree next to the Mizbeach, next to the altar. And the question is, what's the connection between the idolatry tree and the judge? And my great-grandfather, Reb Chaim, he used to say, and I think it was reflective of what was going on in his generation. He said, when you look at an asherah tree, it looked like any other tree. But the truth is, the asherah tree, the idolatrous tree, didn't necessarily have any special symbols on it, but it was worshipped or was put to near a house of idolatry. But it looked like any other tree. And unless somebody was aware of what the tree was being used for, it would be just a tree. And Reb Chaim said, Sometimes you have rabbinical figures who will only appear as rabbinical figures. They dress up in rabbinical garb. They wear special clothes. But they themselves are not special. They don't have the knowledge necessary to be a judge. They don't have the character to be the judge. They don't have the fear of heaven to be the judge. But they look like the judge. We know that seemingly this is not just a problem when it comes to judges of Torah. Lately we see lots of people who wear judges' uniforms, and clearly they lack the character to be a judge. But their uniform is not a uniform. It's a costume. And while this is dangerous in medicine, it's dangerous in all fields. It's especially dangerous when it comes to Torah. So the Aron, if it didn't have the luchos in it, it had no special status. Not only it had no special status, it was dangerous. And this is the idea of Zer versus Zor. In other words, a crown to be a crown, it has to be a uniform. It can't be a costume. And we live in a generation of costumes. I know of cases of people who dress up in Hasidic garb. And in Shabbos, they'll go out of their house carrying musical instruments and smoking a cigarette. A uniform has to be indicative of who the person is. Religion can't be a costume party. This is the idea, I think. The Aron only has significance if the luchos are in it. But if the luchos are not in it, it's very dangerous. And regarding the question that Reb Chaim was dealing with, I have a different answer. And it's not, I think it goes together with Reb Chaim's answer. Why is it? I see, it was just told that impersonating a doctor is a felony in most states. Unfortunately, impersonating a rabbi is not a felony in most states. Maybe it would be, maybe it's fortunate because the prisons might be full. Anyway, so I was thinking, how is it sometimes people are appointed to rabbinical positions and they're appointed as authorities in halacha, very often they try to mold the halacha to meet their personal needs, to meet the needs of what they perceive as the needs of their congregants, ignoring the objective halacha. And still, the people begin to recognize, how is it that way? And the answer is they turn him into an avodah zarah. They turn him into idolatry. You can't ask him questions. He said it, and that's the way it is. And this works together with what Reb Chaim said. Because when they dress up somebody, they appoint someone as a Torah authority. When the person lacks Torah knowledge, so how is he able? But the answer is by virtue of his position, by virtue of his clothes. People begin to accept him, and you can't question. So it's like an Asherah tree. It looks like any other tree. Asherah tree looks like any other tree, but it's an Asherah tree. It's an Asherah tree because in order to that he should succeed, you can't ask any questions. If you ask questions, whether you're asking questions to people on the right or you're asking questions to people on the left, and you have this problem at both ends. He's a rabbi. I remember there was a time that some modern rabbis used to say about some great Rosh Yeshivas, he's a rabbi and I'm a rabbi. And I find even on the other side of the coin, there are people who think that just because they're appointed to a position, they are authorities. But if you don't lack, if you lack the knowledge, if you lack the character, if you lack the character traits of standing up for Torah and for the halacha, if you lack all of that, then you're no authority. And you might have the position, but it's only by virtue of the position, not by virtue of who you are. And however, I want to suggest another possible pshat as to why the luchos had to be put in the aron, before the aron, in the ark, before the ark was put into the Beis HaMikdash, before it was taken, before it was put into the Mishkan. Now, the Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaBchira, so he discusses, the Rambam's opinion is, let's say, the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, the Shulchan, the Menorah, the Mizbeach, the altar, the table, the candelabrum, All these items, the making of these items, was part of the mitzvah of making a mikdash, of making the temple, of making the mishkan. It all comes. And the Rambam lists everything that was in the Beis HaMikdash in the Mishkan that was part of the mitzvah. But the Rambam doesn't mention the Aron, the Ark. He doesn't list the Aron. And the question is why? And my uncle in the Igros HaGrid, in a letter to my grandfather, he suggested that the Ark, the Aron, was considered different than the utensils in the Beis HaMikdash. Even though there was a place in the Beis HaMikdash and in the Mishkan, the Kodesh Kodashim was a place for the Ark. In fact, it could be suggested that the Kodesh Kodashim was made that there should be a place for the Ark. But the Rambam doesn't list it as part of the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash, of building the Mishkan. And the question is, why doesn't the Rambam list it? And the Rambam. So my uncle suggested that, in a sense, the Ark was not a Klei HaMikdash. It was not a utensil of the Mikdash. In other words, all the other utensils of the Mishkan, of the Mikdash, so their place was in the Mishkan, in the Beis HaMikdash. That was their place. But the Ark was, if the Jewish people would go to war, so they would take the Ark with them. So the purpose of the Ark wasn't to be in the Beis HaMikdash, but the purpose of the Ark was to be a place for the Luchos, for the Ten Commandments. And when there was a halacha that the Luchos had to be taken out to war, so the Ark went out to the war. The Ark had significance independent of the Mishkan, independent of the Beis HaMikdash. According to some opinions, if the Jewish people had not sinned with the golden calf, there would not have been a mitzvah of making the Mishkan. But nevertheless, there would have been a need for an ark to have the Aseres HaDibros in it. So the significance of the ark is not limited to the fact that it was in the Mishkan. On the contrary, one could suggest that the significance of the Ark, that the Ark was in the Mishkan, between times when it would be necessary to take it elsewhere. And there's reason to think so, because it's very interesting. The staves that were in the rings of the Ark, the halacha was that you couldn't remove the staves. Even when the Ark was at rest in the Mishkan and in the Beis HaMikdash, the poles with which the ark was carried by the Kohanim or the Levium, depending on the time period. So the staves had to remain in the rings. Even when the ark was lying in the Kodesh Kedoshim, in the Holy of Holies, even when it wasn't being moved, it almost seems like that the poles were part of the Mishkan, part of the ark. The other utensils, when it was carried in the desert. So at that point, the staves were put in the rings to carry the shulchan, to carry the table, to carry the menorah when it was necessary for carrying it in accordance with the halacha. So then the staves were part of it. The staves were put into the rings. But as soon as it was put in its place in the Mishkan and in the Beis HaMikdash, the staves were removed. But the ark, the staves were not removed. Why? Because the ark had to be ready at moment's notice to be taken out of the Beis HaMikdash, to be taken out of the Mishkan. And in time of the Mishkan, we know why it had to be taken out. It had to be taken out because it was taken from place to place. But in the Beis HaMikdash. But the other utensils were also that way. But in other utensils, the staves were not considered part of those utensils. But in the ark, the staves were considered part of the ark. Why was it necessary? What was the message behind it? But the Torah wanted to emphasize that the ark is something that we have to, our perspective of it is that it is something to be taken from place to place. Where was the ark taken? Like the other utensils was taken in the Midbar in the desert from one place to the other. But when the Jewish people would go to war, the ark was taken. And even if there hadn't been a Beis HaMikdash, even if there hadn't been a temple, according to some Shittos, if the Jewish people had not made an Egel Hazav, there would still have been an ark. What's the idea behind it? But Torah tells us about Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, when he left Eretz Yisrael, and on his way out of Eretz Yisrael, he had this dream of Sula Mutzavarza Barosha Magia Shemaima. He had a dream of a ladder that was firmly standing on the ground, and its head reached the heavens. Umaloche Elokim Olim Vyardimbo. And angels of God were going up and down on it. And the question is, what was the message? The Medrash says that that Yaakov Avinu was accompanied by angels. But it was a different set of angels that accompanied him in Eretz Yisrael, that accompanied him in the land of Israel, and a different set of angels that were going to accompany him when he was leaving the land of Israel. However, the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, he says something very interesting. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim says that they represent the Nevi'im, They represent the prophets. Because a prophet, to a certain degree, fulfills the mission of an angel. What is an angel? An angel is an agent of God. And the prophets are angels of God also. It's very interesting. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, in discussing the Kruvim, the human-like figures that were on the Aron and next to the Aron, he says these were angelic figures. He says they represent the Nevi'im, the prophets. Because Torah has its foundation in prophecy. But the symbol of the Nevi'im, according to the Rambam and Nor and Vochem, is angels. And the Rambam says, what was the dream of Yaakov? The dream of Yaakov was that angels will climb up. The Nevi'im, the prophets, will climb up the ladder from earth to heaven. But they have to be able to go down to earth also. He says, a Navi, a prophet, has to perfect himself. He has to perfect his character. And that is symbolized by the prophet, the angel, the agent of God, climbing up the ladder to heaven. But you know, once people reach the heavens, the spiritual heavens, once they perfect their personality, they have difficulty climbing down. They want to stay in the heavens. So, but a Navi, a prophet, has a mission to fulfill. And the mission is to climb down the ladder, to go down to earth again, to give over the message of God to the people, to lead the people in the proper manner, and to be an example. There are those that it's more comfortable spiritually. People find who are on a very high level to stay on top of the ladder. But the message to Yaakov, sometimes it's not enough just to be able to climb up the ladder. You have to be able to climb down the ladder as well. And this was Yaakov Avinu. When the Torah describes Jacob, our ancestor, he's a Yoshev Olam. He's a person who sits all the time in the tents. He's engrossed in learning Torah. He's a total spiritual life. He doesn't have anything to do with this world. And it was perhaps for this reason that Yitzchak, not realizing Esav, perhaps wanted to create, as some of the Mefarshim point out, a union between Yaakov and Esav. He did not feel that Yaakov had leadership ability. He saw Yaakov as being the Kohen Gadol personality, the spiritual personality. And Esav he saw perhaps as being like the king personality. So the message to Yaakov is, until now, Yaakov, you were perfecting yourself. When you were in the tent, you were climbing up the ladder. But sometimes the situation necessitates that you have to come down the ladder to fulfill your mission. And sometimes you have to come down the ladder to learn how to fulfill your mission. Your descendants are going to have to know how to deal with an Esav, how to deal with a Lavan, how to deal with a Shechem. They're going to have to know. They're going to need someone to teach them. A Maisavo, Simon Labonim. It's time for you, Yaakov, to climb down the ladder. And I think perhaps the message of the Aron, of the Ark, being in the Kodesh Kedoshim, being in the Holy of Holies, with the staves never coming away from it, is a message that sometimes it's necessary to bring the Torah out. Sometimes the Jewish people will be in situations where they won't have a Beis HaMikdash. Okay, they're not going to bring the Ark itself, but the symbolism is the Torah they can take with them. And sometimes when they go to war, it'll be necessary to take the Torah with them. You have to always be prepared. You have to always be prepared for these circumstances that arise. Of course, we want to stay in the Beis HaMikdash. We want the Aron in the Beis HaMikdash. But there are times that necessitate that we have to take the Torah with us. Sometimes it's necessary to take the Aron that has the Torah with us when the situation demands it. And I want to say about, you know, when you look at the lists of the soldiers who unfortunately have died in defense of the Jewish people, a large number of them, a large percentage of them, are people who are committed to Torah and mitzvahs. And many of them learn in yeshivas that actually encourage them. In following that path, in a sense, they spend their days in the Kodesh Kedoshim. They are the Torah. But the staves never leave them. On moment's notice, sometimes they're called out to the battlefield. And people can't say, when you look at the list of those who gave their lives, those who were committed to Torah and mitzvot played a prominent role. They might not be the generals. And they might be, I don't know. But they're the ones on the front line. They're the ones that go into the tunnels. They're the ones that sacrifice their lives. Because they understand the message of the Aron, that the poles can never leave the rings at moment's notice. Yes, we want to climb the ladder, but there are times when our mission in life is to climb down the ladder. And we have to give them credit for it. It's unfortunate that people refuse. I'm not talking now about whether yeshiva boys should be drafted, not be drafted, should volunteer, not volunteer. But recognize there what they did, what they're doing for you, what they're doing for the Jewish people in Israel, and even for the Jewish people in Chutz La'aretz, outside the land of Israel. And how they're sacrificing their lives. And even I want to say, the Jewish soldiers who are not observant, not yet observant, and it's interesting, you know, Chazal tell us, there is a machlokas about it, but according to the Ramban Shita, and that seems to be the accepted opinion, Rashi doesn't seem to feel that way, but for most Rishonim, it appears that way. Luchos v'shivrei luchos menachem baram. The luchos and the broken parts of the first luchos, of the first tablets, were in the Aron together. And I was reminded about that. I was watching a film in the early days of the war. Someone took a picture. I assume that person, it was still light outside, it was before Shabbos. But some of the soldiers were singing L'chadodi. They were accepting Shabbos early on the battlefield. And someone took a picture, a movie, probably with their iPhone or whatever. They took a picture how the Frum soldiers, some with beard and payas, some with yarmulkes, were singing L'chadodi. And together with them, someone just told me it was taken by a Druze soldier. Okay. They were singing L'chadodi. And together them, I saw, holding hand in hand, were soldiers without yarmulkes, accepting the Shabbos. And how many of them have started now putting on tefillin, wearing tzitzis, even though previously they were not so committed, they didn't have that background. It reminded me of Luchos v'Shivrei Luchos Menachem Baron. They were in the Kodesh Kedoshim, figuratively, and they went out to war also. And they will go back to the Kodesh Kedoshim. And they might not be Shivrei Luchos anymore. And it's very interesting. Torah tells us in the Tochacha, V'sacharti ish b'risi Yaakov, V'afas b'risi Yitzchak, V'as b'risi Yitzchak, V'afas b'risi Avram Eskor. And I will remember the covenant of Jacob and the covenant of Isaac. And even the covenant of Abraham I shall remember. And the Medrash, Rashi cites the Medrash. That Medrash says, why is it that the word remember is mentioned by Yaakov, by Jacob? And it's mentioned by Avram. But remember, is not mentioned by Yitzchak's name. And Rashi says, because Afrel Shel Yitzchak, the ash of Yitzchak, the ashes of Yitzchak, near Elefanai, appears before me. Savar Munach al Mizbeach, piled, lying on the altar. Well, first of all, I know there are Midrashim that probably can't be taken literally, but Yitzchak was never burnt. Where's the Afrel Shel Yitzchak? You could say it was the ashes of the ram that was placed on the altar in place of Yitzchak. But what's the idea? Sover piled. What's the idea of piled high? But the answer is each of the Avos, each of the patriarchs, had special traits, character traits. And the job, our job, my salvo similar bottom, we should look for guidance, especially when it comes to character traits, to our ancestors, to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And sometimes we have to remember the past. But sometimes there are traits of the past that doesn't have to be remembered. But it could be seen, because those traits were successfully transmitted throughout the generations. The traits of Yaakov were not so successfully transmitted. The traits of Avram were not so successfully transmitted. God says, I have to remember it. And on the basis of the memory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he considers that in deciding the future of the Jewish people. But when it comes to the trait of Yitzchak, what was the trait of Yitzchak? Mesiras Nefesh. Going on the Mizbeach, going on the altar. Those traits were successfully transmitted throughout the generations. The Jewish people persevered. Even though B'chol Dor V'Dor Omdim Aleinu L'Chaloseinu, the ashes piled on the Mizbeach are not just the ashes of the ram. It's the ashes of the Jewish people who generation after generation have a Mesorah of Kiddush Hashem, have given over the strength of Yitzchak. Even the soldiers who up till now were not so observant, they were part of that Mesorah. They are the ones giving over the trait of Yitzchak. It's the Shivrei Luchos Menachem Baron. Some of them gave over their lives. It was like Luchos being broken. But nevertheless, precisely because of that, that represents the Mesorah. Bezalel was chosen to build the Mishkan. And Bezalel is the one who built the Aron himself. Why? Because his grandfather gave his life to prevent the Jewish people from going over the Zorah. He was Moshe Nefesh. Kiddush Hashem. These soldiers gave their lives and are giving their lives. Perhaps more so than those who stay in the Kodesh Kedoshim. And that's not said as, this is not being said as criticism of those who stay in the Kodesh Kedoshim. Chas v'shalom. But we have to recognize that they are continuing the Mesorah, the Mesorah of Yitzhak Avinu, and the Mesorah of Klal Yisrael. And we have to realize what they're doing for us. And for some reason, people don't want to recognize it. They want to deny that these people are fighting for them. And they're upset that the secular Israelis don't recognize what their learning Torah is doing for them. How do you expect them to recognize if you refuse to recognize the Mesiras Nefesh that they have on your behalf? Not just on behalf of Torah, but on your behalf. And let me tell you, if the Jewish people cannot survive, the Torah cannot survive also. Mesiras Nefesh, these Jews are not just giving us the ability to live, but by giving those who sit and learn Torah the ability to live, they're giving them the ability to learn Torah. Yeshivas will honor people who live the light, the void of Torah, the void of mitzvos, because they give money. What's the rationalization? Because they're enabling these people to learn Torah. They're not saving their lives, but they're enabling to learn Torah. These soldiers, whether they're observant or not, they are not only saving the lives of these people, but they are also enabling the continuation of learning Torah. Because if we were constantly on the run, if the soldiers, the Palestinians, and the other Arab nations who would join them, if they knew that there weren't soldiers there, would come in, they would the yeshivas in Eretz Israel couldn't continue to exist. You should at least give them the regard that you give the people who donate money when they're giving their lives. For some reason, they feel threatened by the fact that these people give their lives to them. They want to deny it. It's interesting. I was shown that some people advocating on behalf of a religious party in Ramat Beit Shemesh had the chutzpah to put signs urging people to go out to vote. That's not the chutzpah part. Everybody should vote. Had the chutzpah to put signs to say, Milchemes mitzvah hakol yotzin. A war of mitzvah, everybody goes out. In other words, when they in their electioneering, they're going out to war. But they want to deny what the soldiers who are going out to war, what they're doing. At least say thank you for saving your life and give me the opportunity to learn Torah. You know something? If you would give them respect, if you will acknowledge what they're doing for you, you stand a better chance of seeing what they seeing what you are doing for them. After every war, there's problems, people screaming about yeshiva boys being drafted, not being drafted. My personal experience, when I've gotten to discussions with people who were upset about it, the sense I got, and when I would say one person told me, my son goes to the army, why shouldn't their sons go to the army? And when I mention to them, I think everybody should recognize what the other one is doing. He says, you know, when you get older, sometimes you learn something new. But we can only teach something new when we know it ourselves, when we demonstrate it ourselves. We have to understand that everybody contributes. And until we recognize the contribution and the contribution of others, we'll have trouble convincing others about the contribution we are making to them. And I think that when I complained about these signs that were put up, that's going to cause problems later on. It's going to cause Sinas Yisrael. The Jewish people are united. We're united now. And now with these stupid statements, it's going to cause friction. How are we to understand? But so I complained about it. And the answer I was told, oh, that was put up by young people. It wasn't the leaders that put it up. You know, when it came to making demonstration in Washington, D.C., it was many of the leaders who came out against the demonstration. And no one was choshed them that they were involved in the demonstration. No one gave them the credit. However, when it comes to this, okay, if people who were unauthorized put those signs out, then that is attributed to your organization, to your group. You have to come out and disassociate yourself from this. And to finally say, we appreciate those who went to war, those that are giving their lives for us. Mechemes mitzvah hakol yotzin. We don't have the aron, but many of those that are going out to fight the war, those who learn in yeshiva, have the Torah in them. And even those who are not learning Torah, even those who are not, who till now were not observant, but the Mesorah of Kiddush Hashem, of giving their lives for Klal Yisrael, and they might not even realize it, for Torah Yisrael, they are bringing that part of the Torah into the battlefield, and we have to let them bring that back. And we have to acknowledge it and recognize what they're doing for us, what they're doing for Klal Yisrael, and what they're doing for Torah Yisrael.
If anyone has a question, please put it in the chat. One question is the Rav Yashaber.
One thing I want to point out is I forgot to mention that when the reason, according to the second approach, the reason the luchos were put in beforehand was to emphasize that the purpose of the aron was represents the idea of sometimes going away, leaving the Beis HaMikdash, where the other kalim, the other utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, that was their place. They served no purpose outside the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah.
According to the Rav, to your uncle, the Aaron had the Eidos, and the Eidos included the Luchos and the Sefer Torah. Why couldn't they
Why couldn't they
put an Aaron with the Sefer Torah in it for the second Beis HaMikdash to have the Kiyum of a Torah, even though they didn't have
Because the definition of the Aaron, in other words, you put the Sefer Torah, first of all, not clear exactly where the Sefer Torah went, but the definition of the Aron was the ark that had the Luchos in it.
But did the Aron that they took out to war have the Luchos in it?
Oh, so this is a machlokas. I was explaining it according to the Ramban. The Ramban shita is that the Aron that had it's a machlokas Tanoim actually, but the Ramban shita is, and it seems that the Bavli had that shita also, that the Aron that they took out to the to war was the Aron that had the Luchos and the Shivrei Luchos in it. Whereas according to Rashi, I didn't discuss that Shita. Rashi Shita is there were two separate Aronos. And to war, they took the Shivrei Luchos. That's Rashi Shita. But for most Rishonim, especially the Ramban is very strong that we paskin there was only one Aron for both.
Of the mission of the five things that they didn't have in the second base of Mikdash, the Aron is listed on that list, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things is also asking Or V'Tumim. And your
Yeah.
uncle says in Chiddushei Agron V'Hagrid that it wasn't just that it wasn't just the fact that they didn't have
Ruach
the Or
HaKodesh,
V'Tumim,
Ruach
if they
HaKodesh.
right Nevun, if they would have had it, there was a din they weren't allowed to ask either. Would he hold
Yeah.
that about all five things in
No,
that
what?
list? So, like, we couldn't make an iron in the second base of Mikdash.
So there's a machlokas between, according to the Rambam, we are clearly. Well, the way it's assumed in the Rambam, clearly you couldn't make another Aron because only the Aron of Moshe counted. However, the Ramban in the Sefer HaMitzvah says that you could make another Aron, but that the Aron only had status as an Aron when the Luchos were in it.
Okay, there are no other questions in the chat here, so everyone have a good week, and we should hear good news and for all of Klal Yisrael and